Now, the debate around assisted dying has been reignited after a father of three who had developed a tumour has died at the Dignitas clinic in Switzerland. Jeffrey Spector, who was 54 from Lancashire, died on Friday following a six-year illness. He had an inoperable growth on his spine and faced being paralysed from the neck down. Now, the former Lord Chancellor, Lord Falconer, says he will attempt to reintroduce a bill that would allow assisted dying in the UK.
My bill would allow somebody who's got a diagnosis of 6 months or less to live, and it's his firm and settled intention that he wishes to take his own life, and he's capable of making that decision. He can be provided with a prescription of drugs that he can take himself, he or she can take themselves, in order to end their own lives.
So what do you think? Should this be considered here in the UK? 08459 555 678. Bishop Stephen Lowe's with us this morning. Good morning to you, Bishop.
Good morning, Stephen. Good
morning. And Tom Curran from Exit International, Campaigns for Assisted Suicide. Good morning to you, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning. Why not, Bishop? Why not give us the choice of how we end our own lives?
Well, I am concerned that it produces two fundamental effects on the dynamics of dying. First of all, that once we start going down the road of euthanasia, the pressure by families, I'm afraid sometimes, on those who are diagnosed with a terminal condition can be such that they decide that they don't want to be a burden on their families anymore. And that may not be a good enough reason for them to be given a terminal drug. I worry that that pressure, that exit pressure, in a sense, will distort the way in which any new legislation would work.
But you can build in protections, can't you? You can build in protections against that happening, Bishop.
Well, they're not, actually. I mean, once you go down this road, doctors are involved as well, and that changes as well the nature of medical practice, because doctors have signed, in terms of the Hippocratic Oath, a declaration that they are there not to terminate life, but actually to enable life to continue as far as possible. And if I felt, Stephen, that the energy that's going in by Lord Falconer and others to the assisted dying bill was going into improving the provision of hospice places where people die with dignity, I would be much easier, but frankly, it is not. And instead, we're going down this road of well, let's get rid of the problem by allowing people to kill themselves and prescribing them with terminal drugs.
Tom?
The effort is going in to provide hospice places, but the two are distinctly different. We're talking about choice, and a person should have the choice that they want to die in a hospice or they want to die at home. With hospice, with the palliative care available at home, and there's a lot of work being put into that to improve that. But on the second part, we're talking about choice of a person who decides that it's the time for them to die is now. And if these people are rational people, how can we say that we will make up our mind for them rather than let them make up their mind up for themselves? We've people telling them how they should feel and how they should react, but nobody can judge how they feel except for themselves. And that's a choice that people have or should have.
But I don't believe that introducing that choice actually necessarily will remove the problems I've mentioned. First of all, once that choice exists, then there is a very real problem that family members, maybe even subconsciously, will put pressure on the person who has got the terminal illness because, quote, they don't want to be a burden to you anymore.
I appreciate completely what you're saying, and I agree that there is a danger of that, but we're intelligent enough to legislate to ensure as much as possible that those safeguards are adhered to. But if it's family that are putting pressure on, then maybe it's family we should look at, not the person who is ill. If family are going to turn around, and unfortunately there are people who will take advantage of all sorts of situations, they exist all over the place.
But if we have got a hospice bill which is properly funded, it isn't at the moment because government only puts a small fraction of the total cost of a hospice bed into the hospice movement, which is primarily run, as we know, by voluntary donations through the hospices. if the government were to put more energy into that and more energy into the Macmillan home care services so that people were able to die within dignity. Faulkner's bill only allows people who've only got up to 6 months to live. Well, that is a very short period. The hospice home care service and daycare services, if properly supported, provide a very real alternative to changing the law as drastically as this and enabling people actually to commit suicide with state support.
No, well, I'm afraid I don't agree. And it's obvious that I wouldn't agree. Yes, I agree with you in what you're saying, that more effort needs to be put into providing hospice beds, or more importantly, to provide palliative care at home for people in the final stages of their life. Because 80% of people want to die at home, in their own home.
I agree, yes.
But only 20% of people do. So there's a huge gap in what people want and what is available to them. But there are people who want to live on. There are people who want to make the choice that the time is right for them, and we're not giving them any options.
But you see, I don't believe, and this is probably coming from my position, a theological position, I don't believe that human beings should just wave a wand and say, I've decided it's time for me to die. I actually believe that, in a sense, that belongs to something greater than ourselves. The notion that...
Yes, I respect your beliefs.
I mean, there has been...
About your life.
Well, look...
But it doesn't entitle you to make those decisions for other people who don't have those beliefs.
I'm not actually making a decision. I am not saying that anybody should make... That's exactly my point. I don't want the state to be providing that opportunity for people to be making decisions which I don't think necessarily belong to them. And the notion that...
Well, how can a decision not belong to them about why
they want to die,
Bishop,
I find quite difficult.
Bishop, how can a decision not belong to them about when they die? Who should it belong to?
It never has, Stephen. Think about it. We have never decided when we should die unless we commit suicide. It's quite interesting that until comparatively short period of time ago, suicide was actually illegal. It was a criminal offence. And assisting suicide was actually a criminal offence.
Only from the 1600s. Before that, it wasn't.
Before what?
And it's only recently that we've realised that people should have that right and that it's not a criminal offence. In 1961 in the UK.
Which means that the
situation that occurred in Dignitas now could have happened in the UK, providing we provided the right services.
No, it's actually assisting people to die is still a criminal offence. The DPP... makes a decision about whether or not the assistance and the way it was done is sufficiently serious to enable a prosecution. He or she doesn't always take the necessary action to actually prosecute somebody under those circumstances.
Yeah, well, my point may not have been clear. What I was saying was that the situation that occurred in Switzerland would have been perfectly legal in the UK. The only difficulty was that it was not possible to provide a peaceful death. That the taking of one's own life is perfectly legal. And if a rational person decides to do that, there is no law that can prevent them from doing it. It's the means is the problem. And the only means that are available legally is to travel to Switzerland. And that to me, is wrong. A person should have that choice at home.
But actually, if I may say, I would have much rather, as I said earlier on, go down the road of enabling people to die well at home. It is also, as you know, I suspect full well, part of the situation that when the use of morphine is involved to relieve pain, sometimes the level of morphine given to somebody to relieve that pain is such that it may hasten the death.
Tell us what happened to your wife, Tom.
My wife, Mary.
Yeah.
Well, Mary took a case here to get the blanket ban on assisted dying. We don't want assisted dying available to everybody. We want it available in very limited circumstances. And Mary went to court, to go to the High Court first here and then the Supreme Court. She had to prove that she was rational, that she was sane, that she wasn't suffering from any psychotic illness. And in fact, the master of the High Court here said that she was one of the most remarkable witnesses ever to come before the court. They said that if they could do something specifically in Mary's case, then they would. But they decided, rightly, I think, they decided to remove the blanket ban would leave people open to abuse. And I agree with that completely. I have no argument with that. There are people who would be prepared to abuse. But in saying that, they said that the law needs to be changed. And that's what both here in the Republic of Ireland and in the UK is being done, or hopefully being done. But I would certainly restrict it to very, very limited circumstances and build in enough safeguards to provide as much protection as possible for vulnerable people and to stop people taking advantage. And I think we are intelligent enough that that can be done. Mary did die peacefully at home. I'm sorry that she's dead, obviously, but that's very selfish on my part. I miss her so much because we were so close together, and I love her, not loved her. But this is what she wanted. This was her wish, and she was an intelligent person, a rational person. She made this decision 10 years ago. And I certainly didn't have the right to stand in her way for my selfish reasons.
Let us know what you think at home. 08459 555 678 on this today. 08459 555 678. You could argue, Stephen, that it's slightly easier for you to argue against it when you haven't been in a situation of watching the person you love in such pain that they don't want to live anymore.
I Stephen, have sat by bedsides of so many people during my ministry who are dying and watched them die. And I've also been involved in the work of the Millen Service and the hospice movement as well. And I'm just a fantastic fan and enthusiast for that movement and what it does to help people die with dignity. And I'm aware as well, as I said earlier, that within that movement there is often the use of pain relief, which sometimes hastens death. But the intention is not to kill the person or allow them or enable them to commit suicide, but enable them to go from this life in peace and with support and with their family gathered around them. What disturbs me is that there is this in this movement, and I'm not suggesting what's just been said, because I, in many ways, have got enormous sympathy with the position being upheld by your other correspondent today. But the situation worries me that once you open the door, then we could easily go down the road of, well, you know, why don't we allow a bit more and a bit more and a bit more? And the evidence is in Holland and elsewhere, where the law is much easier, that's exactly as what has happened. So let's see greater enthusiasm for putting a lot more money into home care and the hospice movement.
Well, in doing that, we're excluding the decisions of people who don't want that as an option. And they are a small number of people, there's no doubt about that. And the vast majority of people that I come across do want to live on and want to, as I put it, eke out every second of life. And we're certainly not putting enough effort into those. I am a huge fan of palliative care and the hospice movement. I work with them here. But they do a great job, and they're completely underfunded. And I agree completely.
We agree entirely on this one anyway.
that we should put more resources into that. But by doing that, that's giving one option. There is still the other option of the person who decides, look, I know that my illness is going to deteriorate over a period of time. I want to go now while I'm enjoying life. And how can we say that that is not the right decision for that person?
What do you feel about what it does to doctors who would then ask to prescribe a terminal drug to somebody, actually prescribing, if you like, a poison to kill them?
Well, we don't necessarily have to include the medical profession in this. The only reason the medical profession is included in it is, one, for control, and because they do have the control over the only means of a peaceful death, which is the pharmaceuticals. Now, we could make that available through the pharmaceutical manufacturers, but we're opening that up to the possibility of some loopholes. So the medical profession are the best option from that point of view, and in all of these situations where we're talking about moral issues, the medical profession or individual people in the medical profession do have the option of a conscience clause.
Well,
they don't want to be involved, but there are, I mean, the support that I get and directly from medical professionals is amazing. It's tremendous because they see it. They get first-hand knowledge of people who do not want to stay on. And there's nothing that they can do about it, except in the very final days of their life, when, as you say, this double effect is used.